You don't have to make any notes. I'm recording this session. I'm going to put it on this website. Okay, here we go. How to create the marriage you deserve. And the you means to you personally, not something that you do necessarily together. It's better if you do it together, but it's something you can start on your own. And what I'm going to first do is go through the building up of this, what I learned, and give you a bit of a taste of the people who I received a lot of benefit from. First is Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman. How many of you have heard him do his presentation, Bulletproof Mind? Well, it was last year in Baltimore, was my first opportunity to hear him. And I mean, he's such an incredible speaker. That part was great in and of itself. And then I spoke with him afterwards about some of the things that I've learned while being a marriage and family therapist. And out of our conversation came this notion of talking more about bulletproof marriage, because as Sandra has mentioned, and other workshop presenters have as well, the failure rate of emergency services marriages is very high. In fact, a gentleman at the back was talking with me yesterday, and there's some research that says it's as high as 75%. And that's a huge failure rate. So the idea of having a bulletproof marriage is important. Here's a little case of Dave's.
I'm Dave Grossman, okay? My background, I'm an Army Ranger, West Point psychology professor. You're pretty good. I'm an author, and I'm from the great state of Arkansas. We recently got a little political influence in Arkansas. They said, well, the president's from Arkansas, y'all can have anything you want. We said, we want a presidential proclamation that says only people from Arkansas can tell Arkansas jokes. We got that passed, it's still in effect. Let me tell you all an Arkansas story. There's this old boy from California. There's this old boy from Arkansas, and they're old friends. Every couple of years, they go on vacation together. The old boy from California, he's out on the beach. He's kicked back. He's enjoying himself, running a little low on cash. He sees a note in the bulletin board. It says, Ocean Cruise, $5. He says, Ocean Cruise, $5. That's just my speed. I need one of them. It says, go to room 222 up in the hotel. The old boy from California goes up to room 222, he knocks on the door, he walks in, he says, hey, I'm here for one of them $5 ocean cruises. Bam! Somebody smacks him over the head, takes his wallet, and he wakes up strapped to a log floating out of the ocean. He said, this is so embarrassing, this is so humiliating. All I had to do was check the front desk, see to get myself into. In the midst of his embarrassment and humiliation, he looks up and he realizes, strapped to a log right next to him, bobbing and waving next to him, is his friend from Arkansas. His friend from Arkansas, his name is Bubba. He looks over old Bubba, he says, I can't let Bubba know this got me down. He says, hey, Bubba. Bubba says, ooh. He said, you suppose they're going to serve us any food in this $5 ocean cruise we signed up for? Bubba says, well, they didn't last year. Now, the moral of the story is simply this. If you had a hard time last year, dear Lord, let's not do it again. Yeah?
If you had a hard time, let's not do it again. Any of you who are married, you probably, if you've been together 6 months, you've probably already noticed that the thing you're arguing about today is the thing you were arguing about the day before and the day before that. And when couples' relationships aren't working, they tend to not work in similar ways. And they tend to be doing the same thing over and over and over again. And when that's happening, it's a kind of a little warning bell should go off, and let's not do that again. Let's find something else to do. So that's Dave Grossman's input. The other person that has shaped my learning is a fellow by the name of Les Greenberg. And the important message that he promotes in his work as a psychologist from York University is in his research he's found that we can only change emotion with emotion. So unless we're able to help people access what you were talking about, the underneath part, the deeper part, that cycle is going to repeat. Now, some of you may be familiar with this. And as you see, we start what might be superficial, but it's not superficial, it's what happened. It's where people's behavior, their behavior, and that's kind of what we see. What we see in people is their behavior. It's what we can start with, and we go into facts, thoughts, into reactions. And so what we're trying to do is we're getting into that emotional core and then helping people come back out of it. So changing emotion with emotion is part of what we're doing with debriefings. And then another credit in terms of a teacher is John Gottman. How many people up here are familiar with Gottman? Anyone in a relationship would do well to go to his site and gain some of the information and the research findings in particular. Now, he teaches at Washington State University, and they've been tracking couples now over 20 years. And they're the same couples in part, but over half of them have become divorced. Of those couples that are still together, about half of them would self-report as having a happy marriage. And these couples have been coming into what they call their love lab, and they're videotaped, they're wired up for measuring pulse rate and other kinds of data that they collect. They're observed in their interactions. Of course, there is privacy in part of the love lab apartment, but they're closely studied. And what they're trying to do is find out, okay, what are these couples doing that they're happy? And they've gone through relationships, problems that all of us face, and yet they're still happily together. And you can learn a lot from going to Gottman's site. And in particular, you can learn a lot from the 7 principles for making marriage work. It is a great book. And if you want to give your partner a gift, you get that book for your partner, and then you commit to reading it with your partner out loud in short segments. So you read it to each other, you take turns, and you do the exercises that are in the book. And it has the potential of transforming your relationship. But it is important to read it to each other out loud. It's not a good idea for one person to go ahead and read it and then hold that up. See, I've done this. It's not going to help you all. Turning towards and repair are two of the findings that come out of his research, and I'm going to go into that a little bit later. And I want to give a credit to my wife. Sandra mentioned that she put a card in my jacket last night, so I'm just, instead of talking about her, I'm just going to read the card. My love, as you do your presentation today, know that I am with you. We have learned so much together in this amazing journey as a couple. Your clients and workshop participants are so fortunate to receive all that you have come to know as gifts from your heart to theirs. Be in your beautiful flow and trust that what you say will come. What you need to say will come. So, that's part of what the benefit of being in a relationship is that you can find that partnership if you're willing to go through the deep spots. And any relationship is going to have deep spots. Now, the final credit I want to give, and in some ways the most important, is to my clients. I've been doing this since 1974, and that was the start of the region of Durham, where I worked for many years. And I can remember just in roughly the summer of 1974, I was sitting in my office in a beauty salon of all places, or behind one.
it was regional government, so we just got offices where we could. It was less than a lot of money when the region first got started. And I heard this clunk, clunk, clunk. Someone was coming into my waiting room. And it turned out it was a couple. Well, I knew it was a couple coming in, but I hadn't met them before. And the woman had a cast on her leg. And when they came in, sat down, and I asked what they were there for. And she said, I had an affair. And went on to tell the story of how she was returning from a liaison with her lover, and she got into a car accident. And so she had to call her husband to come and get her at the hospital. So the affair kind of got dramatically discovered. To make matters worse, she was having an affair with her husband's best friend. So I was a brand new therapist, and I was thrust into this very complex situation. And it was a situation in which my mentors would all say, it's hopeless. When I was starting out at that time, when I went to conferences to learn more, and I spoke with the people that were training us back then, an affair, there's no recovery from an affair. This couple would not accept that. They kept working and kept working and kept working, and they taught me a great deal. And much of what I'm going to present that doesn't come from those other people that I'm crediting comes from what I've learned of the countless couples that I've worked with where there's been an affair. And in the area that I live, I tend to do most of the couple work with folks that have affairs. I've developed this sort of reputation for working with extramarital affairs. So the goal of this workshop is to talk about how we build resiliency in the marriages of emergency service professionals. That is the goal. And this resiliency will help you face the inevitable challenges that come more so to emergency services professionals than others. And, you know, as Sandra said, it's not fair to use, well, we face terrible stuff and minimize what your partner might face if they're not an emergency service professional. However, your marriage is being confronted with some pretty serious stuff. So what we're going to do is focus on how to apply what I call the four simple truths of resiliency as it's related to marriage. First one is agreements. Second one is accountability for self. Third one is transparency of self. And the fourth one is openness to one's partner. Now, the reason I pick these relates to what I said earlier. And it also relates to the fact that it's seldom does a couple wake up in the morning and say, let's go for therapy. Usually one person feels the hurt more and is wanting to get therapy, and the partner may not be in the same place, may not be willing, may be very unwilling. So the approach that I take is one where you, as the person who wants to bring change in your relationship, can make a decision to start working on things. You don't need your partner to be right there with you doing the same thing. You can begin to work on the relationship yourself. However, there are three prerequisites. Self-awareness, so you need to be willing to know yourself. You need to have the energy to do what needs to be done, and you need willingness. Because without willingness, it's not going to happen. So self-awareness, energy, and willingness are the prerequisites. Self-awareness, of course, is the ability to look inside ourselves. And say something more about that in a minute. That's not always easy. Sometimes we're so busy, we just don't take a moment to reflect on what's going on deeply inside us. We're so rushed to meet demands of work. That's true pretty much of most people today in whatever kind of field you're in. We don't take time to look inside ourselves. Energy. If we're not feeding our body properly, you know, things like exercise, the right food, those things detract from the energy that we have to put into developing resiliency. And of course, willingness. If we aren't going to step up, if we're not going to show up, then it's not going to change. And we'll keep repeating the same old stuff. So we're going to be Bubba and his friend out there on the log year after year. So all, as I say, all great journeys need to start from where you are. So what I'd like you to do for a moment is clear your lap and just get comfortable in the chair. And when you're ready, close your eyes. There we go. When you're ready, just close your eyes. What I'd like you to do is become aware of where your body is making contact with the floor, where your body is making contact with the chair. Just notice that contact. I want you to take in a deep breath, noticing the air going over your nostrils at the in-breath. Noticing the air going back out on the out-breath. Just breathe gently, noticing your breath. Now, in your mind's eye, become aware of any physical sensations in your body. Notice the location and describe the sensation to yourself. When you finish noticing one sensation, notice if there's another one. And if so, go there, notice the location, and describe the sensation to yourself. Notice what emotions you're having right now. Describe the emotion to yourself. When you finish describing one emotion, it may be that another one takes its place. Describe that. And let your emotions be like waves that wash over you. Noticing them as they wash over you. Now notice the little voice in the back of your head. Notice what it's saying. Allow it to be so. Whatever that little voice is saying, just let it be. Notice it without judgment. Let it say whatever it wants to say. And as you notice your physical sensations, your thoughts, your emotions, you're moving into what is called the observer self. So just be aware of what it is like for you to be in that state of observing your thoughts, sensations, emotions. Being in your observer self. I'd like you to, from that place, become aware of two reasons why you chose to come to the workshop entitled Bulletproof Marriage. Just two. There may be many, many more. Just two. Now I'd like you to become aware again of where your feet are making contact with the floor, where your body is making contact with the chair. I'd just like you to pick someone to have a little brief chat with, if you would. So quickly grab somebody. And one person's going to start, and the other person's going to listen. And what I'd like you to do is share what brought you, why you chose to come into this workshop. And when one first person finishes, then the other person does the same. And that shouldn't take long because it's just two.
Make sure you switch now so both get a chance to talk. Okay, you should all be finished now because it was just sharing two ideas and not getting to know each other for a lifelong relationship. Can I have your attention for a sec, please? Because I'm going to ask you to do something else now. I want you to tell the person, after hearing why they came to this workshop, I want you to tell them something that you appreciate about them. Tell them something you appreciate about them after hearing what they just said to you.
Yeah. Let's say that again.
What I want you to do is tell the person that shared why they came to the workshop, tell them what you appreciate about them. You just had a little mini experience, so, except for the couples that are here, you just had a mini experience, and I just want you to share something, what you appreciate. It can be something about what they said. It can be the expression on their face, their body posture. It can be anything that you appreciate about that person sitting across from you. Okay, you should have both had time to do that now. Is everybody finished? Some are, some aren't. But we're a little tight for time. Like, we're really tight for time. So, okay, can I have your attention? I just ask you, what did it feel like to have someone appreciate you? Did it feel bad for anybody? Did it feel good? Yeah, it feels good. In the first session, when I see a couple, I give them a homework assignment where they start listing what they appreciate about each other. The research from Gottman shows that for every turning away, which would be any kind of an argument, or if you remember that picture of that Sandra had up where they were sitting at the table texting, that's a turning away. It's a clear behavioral observation. For every turning away, there needs to be six times as many turning towards. So an appreciation is a kind of turning towards. The fact that you're looking at me, you're turning towards me, I'm turning towards you. It could be as simple as when you're going shopping with your partner and you remember they needed something because they told you about it. You just say, okay, I'll go get that, it's over here. And you bring it, put it in the buggy. That's a turning towards. And you need six times as many turning towards as turning away if you want a happy relationship. Now, it's not the only thing, but it is a thing. So, the three-finger principle. Getting ahead of myself here. What would you say, if I were to ask you, what is an essential ingredient for a marriage? What would you say to me? Just throw them out.
Honesty.
Honesty? Okay.
Trust.
One more.
Communication.
Sorry? One more. I couldn't hear.
Communication.
Communication. Now, is there anybody who would say you wouldn't want that in your relationship? So we're pretty much agreed those are three good things? Okay. Now think of a time when one of these was missing or when you felt it wasn't happening the way you would like it to happen. Think of that time. Anybody got a time when one of these was missing? Now, if you think about that time, now here I'm trusting you to be honest here with me. When you think of that time, was it you yourself who wasn't being honest, trusting, or communicating, or was it your partner who wasn't being honest, trusting, or communicating? How many thought it was your partner who wasn't being honest, trusting, or communicating when you remember that time when it was missing? Right? Yeah.
Always human.
You're human. That's just what we do. However, it does say something about a problem with these three words and the many others that go along with it when we are having a difficult time in our relationship. Because we focus on them, and it usually is focusing on what our partner isn't doing. Now, I think these words are terrific, but they're like the vision statement or the mission statement of a corporation. This is something that we always aim towards when we're in a relationship. We'll never get to a place where we say, well, we had enough of that, we don't need anymore. We'll never get there. So they're not helpful. Yeah. So they're not helpful to be focused on when we're in trouble. They're just not helpful at all. That's where I come to the three finger principle. Because when we're pointing a finger, there's three pointing back at oneself. And that is an opportunity and an invitation to look inside yourself for what you're unhappy about instead of pointing the finger at your partner. If you point it at your partner, you're more likely to create a downward spiral. I mean, it depends on the sophistication of your partner. With a very sophisticated partner, and after you've been practicing what I call the simple truths long enough, you know, sometimes you can blow it, you can be pointing the finger, and your partner's going to just listen. Oh, you're really feeling upset today. What's up? All right. You know, they can reflect back, and you're going to, well, oh, yeah, right. But it takes some practice, a lot of practice. So in terms of building resiliency, there are four practices. And I'm going to start with what needed to happen for us to have this time together today. What had to happen? I've given you a clue earlier.
Time, opportunity, location, desire.
You said one that is absolutely right. Time. The workshop started at 8:30.
Willingness to attend. Commitment.
No? Simpler. We all showed up. Time and behavior. So the first principle is an agreement. And the agreement has two components. Observable behavior. So when we walked in that door, we could observe that we were all here. And it was at 8:30, and that was a time component. So back to my earlier principle, this is something that you can start to work with yourself and then later invite your partner in on it if you like. If you're unhappy in your relationship, you can ask yourself, am I breaking any agreements? Now, the agreements need to be about observable behavior, and there needs to be a time component, or else you're more over into those things that are sort of endless. So behavior, time. Now the second one, I think I naturally go there, but none of these are more important than the other, is accountability for self. Well, what does that really mean? Well, we're adults, right? We're all adults. So for me, what that means is I'm responsible for my thoughts. Anybody disagree? Anybody want to take responsibility for what I think? No, you wouldn't want to. Also, I'm accountable for my feelings. Anybody out there want to be accountable for my feelings? No. Anybody unwilling to be accountable for their own feelings? You are unwilling?
Oh, I thought you said willing. Sorry.
So we're responsible for our thoughts, for our emotions. Now, if you take responsibility for your emotions, is it ever true to say, you make me so mad? No. That's not true. I'm responsible for my emotions. I might say, when you do something, now if I said, when you behave like an idiot, that's not very helpful, because I'm already blaming my partner for my emotions. So if I say, when you, and I list the behavior, it could be, when you leave your underwear on the floor, I feel frustrated, because I don't think you care about how much work I do. What I need you to do, and this is actually probably the second most important part, what I need you to do is be willing to put your dirty clothes in the hamper. So again, it's a stepped process, but you start by taking responsibility for your feeling, and then you become vulnerable. I feel
and I think. And so there's an axiom out of the Gottman work that vulnerability invites vulnerability. Hostility invites hostility. And finally, we're accountable for our behavior. Now, the second one, or the third one rather, is transparency of self. And in a way, we're all icebergs. Okay? And we get to see the little bit that's on top, the behavior, but there's a whole lot of stuff underneath it. And when we're with our partner, all we see is the behavior. We don't know all the stuff that's underneath, just as much as our partner sees our behavior and doesn't know what's going on underneath. We need to let them know. And so the more we, let's see if I can make this work. The more we let our partner know, this line, you know, kind of goes down. Because we're letting our partner know more about who we are. So that could be revealing our personality. It obviously means expressing emotions, interests, needs, and desires. Self perceptions and self-esteem. We need to be vulnerable about where we are with that stuff. Hidden expectations. Those are just a real swamp or quicksand in marriage where people are going around and they have hidden expectations. They won't say what they want to their partner, but they're going around holding this expectation. And then unresolved issues from the past. One occurred last week. I was finishing my bath. We have a soaker tub, so I kind of relax in there and chill out. And draining the water, and all of a sudden I feel this little tinge of anxiety. And because I'm cleaning out the tub and I want to make sure I don't leave a tub ring. And when I noticed that, I thought, wow, that is not about my spouse. That's not about, it was about me as a kid when I'd have a bath. And I'd get, you know, severely yelled at if I didn't clean the tub out, if my father was going to have a bath after me. If it was anybody else in the family, it didn't matter. But it was him. Boy, did I get it. And so I had a flashback to that moment in time that's still wired in my body. Now, if I wasn't able to do that journey and figure it out, I might come downstairs and be cross with my spouse when it was nothing at all to do with her. Nothing at all. So we talked about it and had a little laugh, and then I thought, this is appropriate for the workshop right here. So, transparency of self. Am I hiding, stonewalling, or withdrawing? Hiding, stonewalling, or withdrawing? Because if I'm doing that, I can be aware of it. And if I'm unhappy in the relationship, I can take care of it. I can do the opposite of stonewalling. I can be revealing. I can be willing to hear what my partner has to say. But the point of it is, I know I can look at myself and ask myself, am I being stonewalling? The final one is openness to one's partner. Am I willing to acknowledge that my partner has a right to be who he, she is? Whether I agree with it or not. She has that right of self-determination. Guess what? I want that for me. But, you know, notice how sometimes we're unwilling to, you know, give that to our partner. So, if I'm, you know, really upset with something my partner's doing, I need to take a step back and say, whoa, wait a minute. What's going on in me that I'm having such a trouble with that? Now, it could be something he's doing that's a deal breaker. As I said earlier, I do a lot of work with couples where there's been an affair. And pretty much, that's a deal breaker. So, there are things that we aren't going to agree with. It's important for us to let our partner know. Very important to let our partner know. Now, like I said, none of these are more important than the other. The concept of agreements comes up here because what I've noticed, almost probably 80% of the time, couples who come in to see me because there's been an affair have not made an agreement about what to do when the marriage is on rough ground, when one of them is unhappy, they haven't made any agreement to see a therapist at the time. More specifically, they haven't made an agreement about what to do when one of them is attracted to somebody else. They never talked about it. Because, you know, they were in love and, you know, nothing ever terrible would happen. they didn't realize that, you know, after a few years, that initial limerence is going to be gone, and relationships can be tough. And it can seem very nice, you know, when you're talking to somebody at work about problems you're having with your spouse, and that person's listening, and they're saying, oh, yeah, I have that kind of problem too, and talk more and more about your problems about your spouse to somebody else, and the intimacy gets more and more and more, and finally, yeah, well, let's go out for a drink, you know, and I've seen that story so many times. And the more that you're unwilling to tell your partner what you're upset about, and you tell somebody else, the greater and greater the distance. So I call it prophylactic in terms of affairs. A prophylactic measure with respect to an affair is to have an agreement that takes care of the possibility that you might be attracted to somebody else, and you talk about it. And if that doesn't work, the agreement is you go and see a therapist. And the time part of that component, by the way, because remember it's behavior, time. So before I have an intimate contact with another person, I'm going to tell you. I'm going to bring it up. I'm going to talk about it. So the behavior and the time. So whenever it happens is the time. That's when you do it, when it happens. Okay? So that's how you deal with things that you're not happy about that your partner does. You talk about it right at the time. From a place where you respect, they have a right to be self-determining. Because if you're trying to convince them that they don't have that right, you're only going to push them away. In fact, that's a general axiom too. The only way you can push somebody is away. So a way to be open to your partner is initiate repair. This is a key Gottman concept as well. That when you're feeling unhappy in your relationship, then that's an opportunity. Whenever you're feeling unhappy, that's an opportunity. It's a different way of looking at it. Rather than looking at it as a problem, it's an opportunity. And it's a time to initiate talking to your partner about what's troubling you. And that's what Gottman calls repair. And that was also one of the key distinguishing features of couples that were together at this point now over 20 years and are happy. Incidentally, those couples argue, some of them, very loudly, very loudly. Some of them even use name calling. Not as many. Not many couples can handle name calling. However, some can, and they're still happy with each other. But they initiate repair. That's what makes a difference. There's a willingness to initiate repair. The other way of supporting your partner's right to be who he or she is to join in their dreams. And so you also can look at yourself if you're unhappy in the relationship, and you can evaluate, are you willing to share your partner's dreams, or are you pulling away? Pulling back. And then when you realize you are pulling back, then you can do something about it. But the initial looking is at yourself, not at your partner. So I know I've rushed through this, but I think we're already 5 minutes over time, but I'm not going anywhere. If you have any questions of either of us, this would be a good time. I know it's a lot of information. I'm curious to hear from the couple. You're the only couple that's here. Any questions or thoughts? That's not a demand, it's just, I'm interested.
I have a question. If there is a conflict of sorts, and it said don't hide, but is it not appropriate to give yourself time to hide what the issue is to make sure you have a sort of mediated response and you're not overreacting?
I think it's appropriate to take the time you need to prepare.
Okay.
And you're not hiding if you say to your partner, I need time for repair. It's what Sandra was talking about earlier. You don't want to deal with it now? Name a time so that your partner's not left hanging. Because when you leave your partner left hanging, that's a turning away. I know that phrase usually refers to leaving your partner hanging sexually. Well, that's also a turning away. However, you're not responsible for your partner's sexual need. Yeah, it's a negotiation. But it does require taking care of yourself.
Okay, well, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Take it back to your folks and let them try it out. Four things. Simple but not easy. That's shared.
That's shared.